back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. For the past 40 years, veteran journalists Donald Bartlett and James Steele have been writing about a number of issues that affect all of us, including taxes, pensions, unions, trade deals, and deregulation. When they wrote their 1992 book, America, What Went Wrong, they were called alarmists for writing, quote, "Popular wisdom has it that the worst has passed, that it was all an aberration called the 1980s. Popular wisdom is wrong. The declining fortunes of the middle class that began with the restructuring craze will continue through this decade and beyond," end quote. Well, here we are 20 years later, and they're out with yet another book proving their predictions. In The Betrayal of the American Dream, they write, quote, "In the 40 years that we have been researching and writing about issues that affect all of us, we have never been so concerned for the future of our country. The forces that are dismantling the American middle class are relentless. America must stop sacrificing its greatest asset, because without a middle class, there really isn't an America." Donald Bartlett and James Steele have been working together for more than 40 years, first at the Philadelphia Inquirer, then at Time Magazine, and now at Vanity Fair. They have written 7 books. They are the only reporting team ever to have received 2 Pulitzer Prizes for newspaper reporting and 2 National Magazine Awards for magazine work. And Donald Bartlett and James Steele join us from Philadelphia. Hi, Donald and James. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you, and I read your entire book, and I have to say it was so infuriating because you tie everything that we're facing together, and what I love is it's very accessible, and not only do you put out so many numbers and statistics, but you also give us so many clear examples of what has happened over the past 40 years. So first of all, you know, you use pretty strong language. Donald, why don't you start off and comment on the quote in your book that says, in the last 40 years you've been researching these issues, you've never been so concerned for the future of the country.
I think the most telling illustration of this, Rose, is as you indicated, when we wrote America, What Went Wrong, we were described as alarmists. You know, that was probably the best term used. Others had more demeaning terms. But we really miscalculated, because the collapse of the middle class has just gone much faster than we anticipated or we thought would be possible. And there's no turning that clock back right now. At least there doesn't seem to be.
No turning the clock back.
Well, barring a massive change and public attitudes, it's not going to happen.
James, what would you add to that?
Well, I think the main thing we've seen out of this is that the forces that have been instituted, the tax changes, the trade changes, the deregulation thing, they've been relentless, and they've been going on for decades. But if anything, the intensity of this, the concentration, and their victories have greatly expanded, and particularly about the last 10 years or so. That's what we're worried about. It's like people don't realize, you know, when we wrote What Went Wrong 20 years ago, we talked about the tax code not being fair. Those were almost the good old days compared to what's happened the last 10 years. And the plans that many of those folks have in mind after this election are even worse in terms of what they have in store for Medicare and for other social safety net programs. One of the criticisms, or one of the things you see on the conservative side now, is they're taking aim at food stamps, even though more people were on food stamps under George Bush than now. But the most telling thing about this is the majority of people on food stamps now are actually working.
Right.
They're working at jobs that pay so little they need that to take care of their families. That's pretty dramatically different than even really 1991 and 1992 when we did that. So we're very concerned that all of this sort of juggernaut of basically conservative interest that has affected so many of these changes in the society, they're just going to continue to push their agenda forward really no matter who wins the election.
Let's talk a little bit about middle class, because your book is called The Betrayal of the American Dream, and you do spend a lot of time focusing specifically on the middle class. What's interesting is politicians, that's their favorite term. They never talk about the poor.
Right.
The new poverty numbers are actually coming out tomorrow, and they're expected to just, again, break records. So, and the pundits, anytime you bring up low wages, they change the conversation, and they middle class, middle class, middle class. So can you both talk about how you define middle class?
Well, what we did was take the wages and salaries we used back in 92 and then adjusted them for inflation. So what that does is give us what we call the heart of the middle class at somewhere between 35 and 85,000. Now, 85,000 is going to be low in New York City, and so there's an extended middle class. Goes up to maybe 110, 115,000, and then you can probably go below 35,000 in certain areas of the country, but not too much below it, and still live a middle class lifestyle. And the middle class lifestyle being having enough money to buy a home, help put your kids through college, do all the things that people who were aspiring to the middle class hope to do over the decades.
What we talk about in the book is the pressures that have been on just millions and millions of folks who are in that category of the middle class. By the way, I should digress a second. If you were to poll people walking down the street, almost everybody thinks they're middle class.
Right.
Even people who've got plenty of money, they may psychologically be thinking about where they came from or something like that. But we mean it solely as an economic term in terms of what you earn and what you have. But what's happened in the last three decades, it's been this constant, inexorable pressure on the incomes of middle-class people. This is why wages and salaries are so stagnant for a huge swath of the American middle class. Not only that, many of their benefits are being taken away from them, pensions or cut back, or they're having to pick up more of their health care costs. So it's not just what they make. And almost everybody we talk about in the book is actually employed. But the point we make is that people are not making what they did. I mean, and everybody's affected by this. Everybody knows the college kid who's gotten his degree, he or she's gotten their degree, but couldn't find a job. They're back living with the parents. Somebody knows a retired person who's lost their pension or their 401k is in such bad shape they can barely get by. Or the middle-aged person who's lost a job. They've got another job, but maybe it only pays two-thirds of what they were earning a few years ago. All of these pressures are just constantly driving down the ability of middle-class people to take care of themselves and their families.
And you report that there are about 34 million individuals and families in the $35,000 to $85,000 range who reported wage and salary income on their 2009 tax return, and they account for about 30% of the returns. So let's go back in history, because it's really important to talk about where this all began. And what's really interesting, and you point this out, and a lot of people, progressives, say that this all started with Reagan, right? That he was the big deregulator. But as you point out in your book, the airline and the trucking industries were actually deregulated by his predecessor, Democratic President Jimmy Carter. And hardly anyone ever really talks about that.
Well, this is really important because both parties are responsible for this, whether it's deregulation or wages or trade or whatever. The only area in which you can point to one party being overwhelmingly responsible is taxes, and that would be the Republican Party. But other than that, it's a joint effort on the part of both parties. And really, one of the points we make now, you've got this economic elite that has just seized control of the country, and they are doing things to further their own ends. And you made a good point at the beginning there when you said nobody really talks about poverty anymore. Poverty is, the middle class is the new poverty, really, as an issue.
Hello?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It really does get depressing after a while, because every day you meet someone in the neighborhood who you thought was reasonably okay, and you come to understand that they're not okay.
Mm-hmm.
People really do prefer to keep quiet about their own circumstances.
The interesting thing about the deregulation thing, Rose, is that while both parties, their fingerprints are all over this, the Republicans in more recent years have adopted a much more aggressive thing in terms of the financial industry, deregulating that, which contributed to a lot of our the housing meltdown and the mortgage meltdown. And also, much of their issues now are government regulations, as though that is a problem out there. This is one of their siren calls that they keep really out there. And we make the point in the book that regulations are not what's wrong with this economy right now. I mean, what's wrong with this economy is we have not figured out ways as a government to start injecting some things that would stimulate jobs and start bringing people's incomes back to some sort of a decent level.
You also point out that when you look at things like trade regulations and benefits, most of the media cover these stories as if they were isolated events devoid of a larger significance or pattern. Why? I mean, why is that? And what can be done about that to help people explain exactly how we got here?
Well, one of our favorite ones, and we both talk about this one, is that every week or every month, we should say, there'll be some story about the trade deficit goes up and down. And last month, the trade deficit declined over the previous month. Totally worthless, stupid story.
Mm-hmm.
And the media of all sorts is constantly reeling these out. What they need to do is stand back and look at what the big picture is. And the big picture shows that as recently as the mid-70s, our exports and our imports were in balance. And that was healthy for our manufacturing sector. And our manufacturing sector provides really much better jobs and benefits as a rule than other parts of the economy and always has. But since the mid-70s, that's been slipping out of balance. Every year, the trade deficit gets higher and higher and higher. Now we have $10 trillion in cumulative trade deficits. None of our other partners have that. So what we call for, and this isn't a new thing, but we need to step back in our business, in the media business, and take a little longer view of these big issues and try to bring some perspective to them, not just these little nibbles and dabs that don't tell people anything at all, but try to show people what is actually going on, why this is important.
Can you talk a little bit about or elaborate more on the importance of pointing out these the exports and the imports? Because in your section, The Cost of Free Trade, you've got just these really, like you said, Donald, these really depressing numbers about how many manufacturing jobs have been lost, how many plants have been closed. And we hear about this. I mean, this definitely gets attention, but not the sort of imbalance between exports and imports.
No, and this really goes to the heart of what Jim just said. Every month there's a story that says exports went up last month, imports went down, and the reader is left to scratch their head and say, well, what does it mean? But what it means is we've had 37 consecutive years of trade deficits. Everybody is fixated on the budget deficit, which, you know, needs to be dealt with, but it is not in the same league as the trade deficit. The trade deficit results in job losses. The budget deficit does not. And until the trade deficit is fixed, nothing is ever going to change. And it's this. What the elite have managed to do is pull little pieces of the economy out and convinced the broad news media to focus on these when the broad news media does. And look, let's face it, most people get their information from TV news, and that's the worst source imaginable. You know, set NPR aside, that's a case onto its own. But the network news programs, the cable news programs, they are the worst sources imaginable for economic news that affects the middle class.
We make the point that as recently as really 1980, there were 19 million manufacturing jobs. I mean, the workforce has grown tremendously since then. Now we have around 10 to 11 million manufacturing jobs. And the loss has been, in the 2000 decade alone, 56,000 plants closed. Mm. greater than any other decade. So one of the points we make is that we have the idea of bringing a lot of this back is probably not feasible, but let's at least stop the bleeding. Figure out ways to bolster that manufacturing sector. Figure out ways that when industries are improperly and unfairly endangered by our trading partners, figure out a way to put a stop to that, or at least tell our trading partners that that's unacceptable to us.
And the other aspect of this is, and this is why it's only going to get worse, it says there is no bright, you know, light on that horizon, because corporate America, and this is a legitimate policy, are looking for ways to produce products with fewer and fewer workers, and they're very successful at it. Mm-hmm. And that's a plus. That's the good side of capitalism. If you can produce X number of products with fewer workers, then that's what you should be doing, but not by shipping it overseas. But what's coming in this country is now they're now looking at running factories, some factories, for three shifts. One or two of them will have no workers on the factory floor. I mean, that is just staggering. And while that's great for productivity, what are the people going to do who used to do those jobs?
So would they have robots on the floors?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because
and automation.
Right. And we'll talk about this later. But you bring up Apple in almost the first three pages of your book, and Apple is even saying if the Chinese workers continue to rise up, that they'll be replaced with robots. You write that thanks to both parties, the trade deficit since 1976 add up to a staggering $10 trillion. That's trillion with a T, an ocean of red ink that translates into millions of jobs. And you write, but you never hear about that. Today we're speaking with longtime journalists Donald Bartlett and James Steele. They're out with a new book, The Betrayal of the American Dream. And when they wrote their last book 20 years ago, America, What Went Wrong, they predicted so much of what we're dealing with today, and they were called alarmists for that. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for Donald and James about the reporting that they've done over the last 40 years, and what are the solutions? What will it take to get us out of this mess? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Eugene writes in, I read America, What Went Wrong 20 years ago, and it woke me up to the mythologies and lies of the American Dream. I thank Mr. Bartlett and Steele for their courageous reporting and look forward to using it in my college classes. Please keep up your brave investigations. Thank you for the email, Eugene. And let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I believe that what the authors are suggesting is necessary but not sufficient, and I speak with respect to their suggestions for our national policies of taxation, etc. The phrase, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains, is now considered anachronistic. But indeed, in a world economy, and I'd appreciate the guest comment on this, in a world economy, if somebody in another country will do the work for two pieces of bread, that you're paying three pieces of bread to the worker to do the same work in the United States, the product from the country where they're doing it for two pieces of bread will be more appealing to the public than where you have to pay them three pieces of bread. I'm only using that as an example. And therefore, the answer to help the situation, I cannot think of any other way that it could be helped, and I'm not sure that it can be helped, than if the workers everywhere organize to demand higher wages. And I appreciate their comments on that.
A very, very provocative question, and we've actually given an awful lot of thought to just this very thing. I guess the first thing to say is low wages are not the only issue out there, and I think that's one of the points of the book. Yes, in China, they earn less than over here, but there's another whole thing behind the whole development in China, and that is the very strong activity of the Chinese government at both the national and the provincial level that subsidizes companies, that in some cases actually founds and incorporates these companies, that provides all kinds of benefits to them that have nothing to do with free trade, all kinds of things that reduce the price of a particular product. I mean, And that's the point we make in the book. This isn't just a matter of cheap labor over there and free trade working. This is not anything close to an equal playing field. And that's what concerns us greatly. And we in this country, you know, every country is dealing with this. And many of the European countries are also dealing with various aspects of this. But the fact of the matter is they don't have, the Japanese don't have, and most of our trading partners don't have the kind of trade deficit we have. We have just let this vanish here, the jobs. We have not in any way or another tried to transition into these new eras. It has been so abrupt. It has been so catastrophic. And public policy is done. The other main point of the book is this, is that many people treat what's going on in the world as just though it's inevitable. This is just the global economy. It's just like a hurricane blowing through. What can you do about it? We make the point that that is not true. That while there are global forces, there are ways policies can be implemented to make sure that this is less disastrous for millions of workers, that it is better for the country overall. But the entire approach that we've had in these issues of globalization is the totally the other direction, that there's nothing we can do about it. We're part of this bigger world. Just let the chips fall where they may. But none of our other trading partners play by those rules. And until we wake up on that, we're going to continue to have our head handed to us on trade.
Well, and you bring up some really interesting examples about what's going on in China with solar. And then you also write about how high-value jobs are also being outsourced, and we were told that wasn't going to happen. But we've got full lines, and let's talk about those examples after the break. Let's take a few more calls before we go to break. Let's hear from Don in Berkeley. Hi, Don.
Hi there. So happy to hear you interviewing these wonderful journalists whose books I've read. And I'm calling in to say that they've written a book that parallels a film I just produced called Heist Who Stole the American Dream, covering all the same points and also offering a number of solutions, and it's going to play at the Brava Theater in San Francisco on the 27th. So I guess my question for them is, how do they see reversing the increasing oligarchic rule in this country?
Well, this is the big question. And again, it's one we've debated and tremendously in the whole Citizens United ruling out of the Supreme Court that's now pumping even more and more money of the few into trying to shape the opinions of the many and so forth is further complicated. The heart of it still remains trying to get money either out of politics or at least control it. More than it is today. People have talked about everything from constitutional amendments to one thing or another, but that goes really to the heart of the issue. Because we can talk all we want about how the tax code needs to be made fair, which it does. We can talk about how we need a tough trade policy, which we do. We can talk about how we've got to stop this deregulation mania, which has been so destructive for so many industries and the financial future of millions of Americans. But until there's an actual change in the actual leadership in Congress, not just leadership, but membership in Congress, none of that's really going to happen. And I think we all know that.
Well, thank you for the phone call, Don. And you can email us information about your film at feedback@yourcallradio.org, and we'd be happy to put a link on our website. Today, we are speaking with veteran journalists Donald Bartlett and James Steele. They're out with a new book called The Betrayal of the American Dream. And you might remember that back in 1992, they wrote America, What Went Wrong, and they predicted so much of what we're facing today. And back then, they were called alarmists. And so they're out with another book saying, well, here we are today, but they also have solutions, and we will talk about those solutions after we take a quick break, and we'd love to hear from you. You're listening to Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of KALW, joining Rose here in the studio to ask for your support in the midst of this really important conversation with Donald Bartlett and James Steele. Rose, I mean, you mentioned these guys are veteran reporters. They've been on these issues for a long time. But we should say these are probably the most honored investigative reporters in the United States, and they have been on these economic issues from an independent perspective for decades. Your support here at KALW keeps this independent discussion going. Give a call now to 800-525-9917 or go online to KALW.org. And Rose, we have a challenge.
Oh, great.
Susan Boyle in Oakland, great supporter of your call and of KALW, has put forward $500 to challenge 20 listeners to support your call in this hour. So if we, by 11 o'clock, can have that number of calls or clicks, that means we get $500 additional for local public radio.
Thank you, Susan Boyle. And you can support KALW in your call by calling 800-525-9917 or online at KALW.org. And for a contribution
of $120.
$120, we will send you a copy of Donald Bartlett's and James Steele's book, The Betrayal of the American Dream, 800-525-9917. I just finished the book last night at about midnight, and it is chock full of information that you are going to want to read and share. They tie all of these issues together so well, and there's a lot of new stuff in here. We're going to talk about that after the break, just about how high-value jobs are being exported. 800-525-9917. You can also go online, KALW.org. And again, 20 listeners, and we'll get an extra $500 to continue having an hour discussion, creating a space for you to also ask questions of these incredible journalists.
Rose and her team put together this Agenda for New Economy series on Tuesdays every week, talking about the critical issues from an independent perspective, giving you as much information as you need, letting you take part in the conversation, then turning it to solutions. The lines were lighting up today before Rose even gave the number. We care about these issues. Your support makes it possible to have these discussions.
800-525-9917. $120 contribution will send you Donald Bartlett and James Steele's new book, The Betrayal of the American Dream, an excellent read. You can also go online to KALW.org. And you know that we've been talking about these issues for years, and we will continue. We have to have this space to have an hour, to open up the lines, to talk about trade, taxes, pensions, what's going on in Chicago with the teacher strike, you name it. That is why we need this station to stay strong. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
800-525-9917. Keep locally based independent journalism strong here at KALW. Keep this place for conversation for everyone in the community alive and well. Thanks.
Thanks for your support. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and today we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by speaking with veteran journalists, the nation's most honored investigative reporting team, Donald Bartlett and James Steele. They're out with a new book, The Betrayal of the American Dream. And I'm hearing from a lot of you who read their book in 1992, America, What Went Wrong. And at that time, they said the declining fortunes of the middle class that began with the restructuring craze will continue through this decade and beyond. And for that, they were called alarmists. But here we are. The poverty numbers come out tomorrow, and they're expected to break records again. So we were talking with James Bartlett and Donald Bartlett and James Steele. And now they are working for Vanity Fair. They've been at the Philadelphia Inquirer and Time Magazine, the only reporting team ever to have received two Pulitzers for newspaper reporting and two National Magazine Awards for magazine work. We've got full lines, but we'll have a few open in just a couple minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website so others can see it. And before we get to calls, just because I want to make sure you tell these stories, I really didn't hear much about these high-value jobs that are being outsourced, and also the fact that you've got companies like Caterpillar and Boeing turning over proprietary technology to the Chinese. Can you talk about this, and where is this going?
Well, this actually amazed us as much as we have followed these issues over the years. And I think there were a couple things that happened. One is we came across a report that the Department of Labor did a couple years ago, and it talked about American service jobs that were susceptible to offshoring or outsourcing, whatever you want to call it. And it said basically 25% of the service industry workforce, 160 occupations. This is like 30 million jobs. I mean, we're talking about real numbers here, is susceptible to offshoring. And when we began to look into this, some of the jobs involved are just amazing. Aerospace engineers, I mean, they have an average annual income of $93,000. Anthropologists, $56,000. Chemical engineers, $85,000. Fashion designers, also susceptible to this. Graphic designers. Anyway, I'm not going to read all 160 of these. I'll save you from that, Rose, but that's the point. All these things that were supposed to be our jobs are now going offshore. And back when we did What Went Wrong, everybody said, well, manufacturing, it's going to go offshore. That's okay. Those are dirty jobs. Those are ugly jobs. Let somebody else do that. Leave us with the brain jobs, the smart jobs. That'll be our future. But what we've seen in these reports on labor on these service jobs is now these jobs, which were supposed to be our province, yeah, they're just as endangered and imperiled as many of the manufacturing jobs were 20, 25 years ago.
And what I don't understand is why would companies like Eli Lilly, the pharmaceutical giant, and Caterpillar, why would they hand over proprietary technology to the Chinese? Because, as you write, soon the Chinese will make the products for themselves without the help of their American tutors. You also write that in some cases, engineering and design knowledge, some of it funded by U.S. taxpayers, will flow to the Chinese, allowing them to shortcut a development process that ordinarily takes generations. Why would these companies do this?
Well, everybody is fixated, Rose, on the quarterly earnings report and profits, and that's the name of the game. How high can we run up the profits? The corporate executives get rewarded for bringing in the highest numbers, and that's where we are. Nobody really cares anymore. Not that this country was set itself apart by doing by implementing labor policies that only promoted the welfare of the working person. That's not the case. But what was the case was there was a broad-based policy. It was a mixed policy. You had a mixed economy, for example. That's a phrase you haven't heard in decades. But it served this country well because what it meant was you had some corporations that flourished in a totally wide open marketplace. You had some that were tightly regulated, and you had some that were moderately regulated. In other words, you had a mix. Now everything has to be totally unregulated. There can't be any controls. And what you have is a winner-take-all economy, which is reflected in the inequitable distribution of income, which is the worst since the robber baron era.
You know, Rose, the point you're making about these high-end jobs, and which exactly what Donna's talking about there, in terms of the companies that made these bargains with China on the short term to get the business over there. But what is really so disturbing to us about this is nobody at really the national level is talking about this. Mm. I mean, they're not talking about, you know, what is going to happen to people if these jobs, these high-paying jobs, these which were to be here, what's going to happen if these go? I mean, what is going to replace them?
Right.
And there's no discussion of that that we've been able to really see.
Well, and all they're basically saying is we are creating jobs. I mean, they're not even mentioning the fact that the Employment Law Center came out with a new study last week.
Yes.
That found that the majority of the new jobs being created, about 3 million, pay between $7.50 and $12.50 an hour.
Absolutely. And that dovetails with even the Labor Department's own studies, which every year they talk about the 10 most popular jobs out there. There are home health aides, nurses' aides, certain things in the retail sector. Very, very few high-paying jobs are being created.
And there's a real domino effect to this, which people just don't seem to understand. And your point is really important, that the new jobs do not pay what the new jobs that are being created don't pay what the old jobs that have been lost paid. That's reflected then in tax revenue, which means that we don't get the same tax revenue we used to get. It's reflected in Social Security tax revenue, which spells more problems down the road for the Social Security system. I mean, this is a self-feeding, and we talk about it somewhere in the phrase, we are eating our young, and we really, really are.
Well, we have an email from Carlton who says, isn't it the role of capitalism to put people out of work?
Well,
I don't know if it's the role, but I mean, you know, the point we make in the book is there used to be, and Don just alluded to this in a couple of questions back, there used to be a balance in the system in this country. I mean, you always have multiple interests out there. Certainly you have the companies that want to make all the money they can. But you need other laws. You need labor laws. You need environmental laws. I mean, that's part of the balance of creating a decent society, a solid society. And that's what's out of kilter. All of these things have slipped so that there are no breaks on that process anymore. And that's why our book isn't particularly, it's not a radical book in that sense. We're talking about just we need to restore some of that balance in the system that actually worked in this country for a long time. And one of the statistics that got us was everybody knows now about the inequality, how unequal this country has become. But what's interesting, statistics show in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, personal income for the middle class and the very wealthy grew at roughly the same rate. And so nobody's unhappy that they're rich people or anything like that, but everybody's kind of prospering at the general rate together. But from the late 70s on, those lines have diverged. And the reason they've diverged isn't because of the global economy. It's because of public policy, from tax policy, trade, and on down the line. It's not an accident. It's not some hurricane that blew through. We can change this just as those policies were changed that have caused this result.
And this point that Jim's making is very important because it goes to the heart of the function of government for so many years was to be a kind of referee, an arbiter, to make sure one side didn't get out of control over the other side. And that's exactly what has happened now because there are no controls anymore on the economic elite. They do whatever they want, and that's it. And the working people are really, really have no one to speak for them because Congress doesn't and the government doesn't.
We're speaking with Donald Bartlett and James Steele about their new book, The Betrayal of the American Dream, and they have been working together for 40 years on these issues. We've got full lines, so let's take a few back-to-back, and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Karen in Alameda. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, Rose and gentlemen. Yes, what I'm calling about is just about almost every single company and corporation in the United States has outsourced all their jobs and laid off all their workers, including, you know, the big scandal about Ralph Lauren and the uniforms for the Olympics were all made in China. And so a friend of mine went to Pottery Barn, big company in this country, all last Christmas. There wasn't one item in the Pottery Barn that wasn't made in China. We do not even make a toothpick or a clothespin in this country anymore. Those are made in China. We are importing drywall from China. We are importing broccoli from China. We had Steve Jobs, whose people just worship at his feet. All his product line was made and outsourced in China. So basically, everybody's just buying it because everything's made in China. Congress is not penalizing corporations, even in light of this financial depression that we are in. We are not in a recession. We are in a depression. That is not being addressed. The presidential candidates are not addressing it. The news stations are not addressing it. The New York Times, the Chronicle, the LA Times, they're not addressing it. This should be front page news. And it's totally, totally controlled. And it's totally not talked about. But meanwhile, people in this country are hungry, they're homeless, and they don't have jobs. So that's what the big thing is. So let's talk about it 7 days a week.
Well, your point is, I mean, you're right on the, you couldn't be more accurate. Nobody talks about it. This is really like the 600-pound gorilla in the room. Everybody ignores. And all you have to do is look down the road and see where this is ultimately going to end up. And it is not very pretty.
Well, have you two been doing many interviews, and how are the questions?
Well, a lot of the questions are actually very good, and Karen, if this is any consolation, I'm telling you, an awful lot of people feel as you do, and we've heard from a lot of them since the book came out. The book has had a very favorable reception because I think it's hitting home with exactly the kind of person you're talking about. Actually, her summary of a lot of the situation sounds like really many of the themes of the book. I mean, right. the point we try to make in the book is everybody knows things are hurting. Everybody knows situation that people around them or friends or neighbors are in. So the average person out there knows that the country is not in the greatest of shape. we try to just show that it's not an accident, that there are reasons why this has happened, and there are reasons why it could change. And she mentioned all of these products out of China. The point we try to show in this is it's not just cheap labor over there. It's the various policies the Chinese have that have increasingly consolidating their hold on various markets. I think you mentioned earlier solar,
right,
Rose, and you know the Chinese made a conscious decision about 10 years ago to basically dominate that market. And I mean, solar photovoltaic panels were invented in this country, Bell Laboratories, if I'm not mistaken, and the first manufacturing of those products took place in this country. If we had behaved like the Chinese behave, we would dominate that industry probably globally. But because we believe that if somebody else can produce it cheaper under who knows what conditions, no labor laws, no environmental laws, government supporting those companies, we don't care about that if it's a cheaper price. That's the point of the book, in part. We've got to face the fact that if we're going to continue to believe this, you know, just about every job is going to be wiped out in this country.
And just to give a couple numbers, you report that by 2011, the Chinese had taken over the solar voltaic market. By then, more than 50% of the solar panels installed in the U.S. were made by Chinese companies. Chinese solar imports jumped from $21 million in 2005 to $2.6 billion
right
in 2011. But they're also government aid to subsidize and export. An export industry is illegal under global trading rules, but it seems like these rules just don't really matter anymore.
They don't matter, and nobody steps in to truly enforce them, and that's the point we make. And every time anybody talks about that, they say, oh, my goodness, we can't throw up walls around the country.
Right.
Well, we've got to take some action. We're not talking about putting walls around the entire country. We're just talking about when there is a true injustice like that, step forward. Instead, half the politicians were obsessed by the Solyndra scandal, which, of course, is in your area. But the point being, you know, there's a bigger crime and scandal going on in terms of the way the Chinese have subsidized that industry, that have driven out of business all those producers in the U.S. That's just one story. I mean, that's replicated in a whole range of different industries, not just by China, but by Korea and by the Japanese as well, where we've just sat back and let that happen. And we're just saying, if we're going to continue to do that, it's just going to be a continuing, ongoing catastrophe.
Well, thank you, Karen, and we will continue covering these issues. Let's go to our next caller. Let's hear from Mark in Aptos. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks. I can understand shrinking middle class through the natural progression of a free enterprise system, but it seems like the either corporate elite or financial elite kind of orchestrate an acceleration by deregulation and or union busting, et cetera. And I'm trying to figure out trying to understand what the value to them would be of a smaller middle class. It seems like you're shooting yourself in the foot because you have less profit to make from a middle class.
This is a really important question. And this really, the answer to that question blew us away because we missed it completely. A few years ago, one of the big hedge fund gurus issued a report saying that the middle class in America is now irrelevant. And that is because their money is going to come from the exploding middle classes in China, in Brazil, in India, and in other countries. And their numbers are so huge, they are overwhelming, that the U.S. middle class is indeed irrelevant. And that's, you can see this all the way down the line now. And it is really scary because the most profitable shopping centers out there are the high-end shopping centers where, you know, middle class people can't afford to buy. And those businesses are doing quite well. And they issued a report, Madison Avenue, the advertising industry, Advertising Age, the Bible of advertising, issued a report, I mean, maybe three years ago, saying that basically the middle class was just repeating the statements from the hedge fund guru, said that the advertising industry also considered the middle class irrelevant. Their money was being made at the upper end. the middle just doesn't matter anymore. And this is a totally new, you know, proposition, because your caller is right. That was the belief long harbored that, well, the rich need the middle class to support them. The rich no longer need the middle class at all, at all.
And you have this great quote, which I'm searching for. I can't seem to find it, by an executive who basically, he gave you this, or you found this damning quote about how they really don't care about these workers. Do you remember what?
Yes, this was a quote. I think it's, I can't remember if it appeared in Reuters, but it had to do with a hedge fund fellow who was not quoted by name, but he just said there's a debate inside his company,
right,
about who's important and who's not, and people say, what about the middle class? And they say, well, if four or five people move into the middle class in China, India, and perhaps Brazil, and one drops out of the middle class in the U.S., that's a pretty good trade-off. And that's really just what Don was talking about, is that the heart of a lot of American corporations is based on growth. So you try to figure out where that growth will be. And they see growth as abroad, overseas, in those emerging economies. And therefore, that's where their thrust is, and that's what they care about. So if the middle class here doesn't have the money and the wherewithal to buy like they once did, well, who cares? They're going to make their money elsewhere.
And to top all this off, you have a system in which Washington rewards the global multinational companies for implementing these policies and imposes the lowest taxes on them.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they just penalize those domestic corporations that can't take advantage of all the loopholes they have created for the global ones.
And I also wanted you quickly to comment, because we're almost out of time and I want to get a few more calls, but the importance of independent media, because you also write about what you call the propaganda machine to create these narratives and spread misinformation. You specifically talk about the Cato Institute and the Koch brothers.
What you see with them, and again, this starts big time, starts in the late 70s into the 80s, and they're just continuing to build the formulation of these tax-exempt groups that put out position papers which invariably go against the interests of the average person. And the Kochs are a perfect example of that. They funded Cato Heritage and a whole range of others. One of their foundations, on the eve of the midterm elections in 2010, trots out some woman from Canada who says, I would have been dead if I'd let the Canadian healthcare system take care of me. I had a brain tumor. I had to come to the States, and they saved my life, and so forth. Turns out she did come to the States. She had an operation. The doctors all said it wasn't even fatal. By then, of course, the election has happened, and people watching that may have been influenced by that. And that's the great danger that's going on. All of these position papers are coming out that are, I think, improperly influencing people in terms of that direction. That's why so many people probably are not voting in their own best interest, because they're being improperly propagandized by these things that are frankly not true.
Well, let's try to take one more call before we have to end. Let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Good morning, Rose, and thank you very much for taking my call. I'd like to discuss an incident that happened recently. As your panel knows, President Obama was very proud of the fact that he signed this trade agreement with Korea, because he said the Korean people could now buy American cars. Well, I recently heard an incident on some other public radio channel where any Korean who buys an American car in South Korea today will be subject to a tax audit. Consequently, the Korean populace who would buy cars are disinclined to buy American cars. And, of course, I don't know if President Obama has been told this or what, but I'd be interested in the comment from your two panel members.
Thank you.
Obama's done a lot of very positive things, but he is in the long line of presidents, Republican and Democratic, who sign these trade bills and talk about all the jobs and products from America that they're going to generate and sell. So that's, in that sense, Bill Clinton said the same thing when he signed NAFTA about all the American cars that would be sold in Mexico and so forth. So, unfortunately, this is a long trend. Every president feels they have to sign free trade bills, regardless of what impact they're going to have on their country. And I'm not familiar with this business about the Korean taxes, but we are familiar with the fact that when these bills are signed, they never generate the benefits that they're supposedly going to. I mean, before NAFTA...
And James, sorry to cut you off, but we're out of time. We'd love to have you both back to really focus on solutions, because
sure.
We're getting so many phone calls and emails about
sure.
solutions. Okay,
be happy
great.
To.
Great. James Steele and Donald Bartlett are authors of The Betrayal of the American Dream. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, and thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for listening.
And you've been listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of Local Public Radio, here with Rose. And we have a challenge in this hour from Susan Boyle in Oakland. She is a KALW listener, a Your Call fan, and she has put $500 of her own support forward and said if 20 people call or click during this hour of Your Call, she'll put that $500 into the kitty for Local Public Radio. Be the next person to help us make it there. We've gotten 8 calls and clicks in this hour. Pretty good for the fact we've only talked for a couple of minutes. But right now, we've got to do it in the next 2 minutes.
So we've got 12 left to make the $500. And again, thank you, Susan Boyle. 800-525-9917. Of course, we'd like to get a lot more than 12 calls to keep this station and this show strong. $120 contribution to KALW, and we will send you this excellent book by Donald Bartlett and James Steele, The Betrayal of the American Dream. And we will definitely have them back to talk about solutions. Sorry I didn't get there, but there were so many other questions to ask them from you. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org.
The Betrayal of the American Dream, yours for a $120 contribution to KALW at kalw.org or 800-525-9917. Thanks to Corinne Schlanger in East Palo Alto, Mark Valentine in Oakland, and the law firm of Joseph A. Kritz in San Francisco, all of whom have called or clicked during this hour to support your call.
800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. Karen in Alameda called in Matt to say, we need more of this information. This is why we have to keep this station strong, because we do talk about these issues on a regular basis, especially on Tuesdays here on our Agenda for a New Economy. Support that. 800-525-9917. $120 contribution will get you The Betrayal of the American Dream. If we can make our 20 calls, we'll get an extra $500 from Susan Boyle. You can also go online to kalw.org.
A click is as good as a call, and in this partisan election season, so much of the coverage of the economy is driven by what do the Democrats say, what do the Republicans say. Here on Your Call on Tuesdays, we take it from a different perspective. That is the ground up. Your support makes that kind of independent conversation possible. It is a fact-based discussion. It is not about what did Obama say, what did Romney say. It's about what's happening out there over the long term, the big picture, and how it affects real people. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. It's also about holding politicians accountable regardless of their party affiliation. That is also very crucial right now. 800-525-9917, kalw.org. The Betrayal of the American Dream is yours for a $120 contribution. Keep this station and this show strong.
We have 60 seconds to make this challenge. 800-525-9917, kalw.org. Every click or call brings us closer to an additional $500 for Local Public Radio.
And independent media, 800-525-9917. $120 will send you The Betrayal of the American Dream, kalw.org. 100% of our funding comes directly from you, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Keep us independent. Keep us going. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. Thanks to everyone who is calling or clicking to support KALW San Francisco. 800-525-9917. kalw.org. Be the next person to call. Get a hold of Bartlett and Steele's new book. Show your support right now.
800-525-9917. Thanks for your support.